a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
To order this morning, ask Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdallah? Here. Hansen?
Here.
Heidekram?
Here.
Knutson?
Here.
Olson?
Here.
Roden?
Here.
Trubach-Derry?
Here.
Ray?
Here.
Hempster?
Here. We have minutes before us.
Move to approve.
We have a motion. We have a second. There's a discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. We have 6 bills before us this morning. No, we don't. We have 5 bills before us this morning. I'm going to defer Senate Bill 114 until Wednesday, February 1-2, until Wednesday, February 3rd. That then brings us to our agenda this morning. First item on our calendar is Senate Bill 82. Do we have proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason Gant, State Senator Sioux Falls.
Senator Gant, welcome.
Thank you. If it would please the chairman, I have an amendment that the secretary has, and I believe he has copies to pass out. Well, as you're looking at the amendment, or maybe if you want to.
Senator Gant.
If I can talk about the amendment
Please do.
The bill. Over the years, we've moved a long ways in our access of information to the public. If this committee recalls, a year or so ago, we passed a major bill that created the open.sd.gov website, which is currently up and running and has been for the past, I don't know if it's been 2 years now. I think it's been 2 years. And in there, it's having a lot of information about our state government, where the money is going, what the budgets look like, what different departments are spending. And it's truly showing the taxpayers where their tax dollars are going. And I think that's been a wonderful addition to state government by becoming more transparent so that the people can see where their money is going. And with transparency and our strive for a more open government in South Dakota, I bring today Senate Bill 82, which is going to require that the government put onto the searchable website copies of contracts that the state has with different entities. You'll see in the amendment where it talks about professional services, contractual services, contractual supplies. So information and services that the state is requesting from private companies, those contracts will then be put on this website within 60 days after they've been implemented, and they'll stay on this website until at least a year after the contract has expired. Thus giving, if you are looking at a contract for ABC services and you wondered how much they were paid last year versus this year, you'd be able to do that on this website by seeing what their contract information was. There is language in there about $10,000 or more. One of the areas we were trying to avoid was if the Bureau of Administration or whoever went to the local hardware store and bought some nuts and bolts, that those types of information we wouldn't need on there. But if it does become a time where we're seeing more and more things for $9,999, then the legislature surely could look into changing that. In working with the governor's office, they are very supportive of this to continue to create more transparency and openness in government, and I would sure appreciate the committee's support in Senate Bill 82's amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gant. Additional proponents of Senate Bill 82?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Neil Fulton, Office of the Governor, and we support Senate Bill 82 as it will be amended by 82OA, the amendment in front of you. If I could just touch on a couple of, I guess, technical aspects. Mr. Chairman, I want the group to be clear, since September of 2008, we have at our OpenSD website, which is currently searchable by vendor. For example, if we go to Ace Hardware and make a payment to them for bolts, that would show up. If we make a payment to a landowner who has a walk-in area, that would show up. If my folks ranch had that, for example, Fulton Ranch would show up. If you make a payment out to almost anyone that has money moving in and out, if we make a payment to the universities, to schools, to those people, that money shows up. Since last July 1, many of the members of the committee will remember we passed a bill that I think was Representative Hamill's idea to require RFP processes for most service contracts in excess of $50,000. We had exemptions for certain professional services like legal and medical services, sole sourcing, emergency, and those things. Since that time, we have been posting on OpenSD all the contracts that are subject to that RFP chapter. So we've had a little over 6-7 months to see this work and see how we can link through to vendors. So we're doing that already with those contracts. I think Senator Gant's concept then expands this out and allows us to cover pretty much all of the world. The definitional section, if you look at professional services, services and supplies, ties back to, I believe it's House Bill 1046, which is an extensive rewrite and consolidation of the procurement chapters of the code. Professional services is defined pretty expansively as arising out of vocation, calling, occupation, involving specialized knowledge, skill, or predominantly intellectual services. Services is furnishing labor, time, or effort by contract not involving a specific end product. And supplies is any property, including equipment, materials, and printing. So we think that covers pretty much most of what state government is doing. We then included two other specific provisions just so we didn't miss them. We required that consulting contracts filed with the state auditor be posted. We figured those are going there. It's a good way to consolidate them. We also required that legal services contracts, which are currently required by statute to be filed with the Attorney General, be rolled in here too. So we think we've caught most of the waterfront there. I would note just a couple more things. The open records legislation that I believe we passed last year does provide for contracts to be posted. It is permissive, so we can go beyond this if we're able to and choose to. This is mandatory, and I think that's good. It puts this here in place long after many of us were gone. I will tell you I appreciate Senator Gant's accommodation on the one-year limitation at the end. The open records requirements are that we keep contracts for 2 years at a minimum. Many folks in their records retention manuals keep them longer than that. Our reason for at the outset going with a one-year post-term requirement is this does gobble up memory. If you talk to the folks over at Bureau of Information and Technology, we do about 97% of our transactions online now. That's a good thing. We post this information online. That's a good thing, but it gobbles up memory. I would like to let us see where we're at and have the mandate only go for 1 year. If we're able to keep it out there longer, certainly we will. And in most instances, the actual documents are retained on fiche or in hard copy much longer than that. So I'd stand by for any questions, Mr. Chairman, but we're fully supportive of the bill and appreciate Senator Gant working with us on some technical issues.
Thank you, Mr. Fulton. Other proponents of Senate Bill 82? Other proponents? Opponents of Senate Bill 82? Opponents? Questions, members of the committee? Questions? Senator Knutson.
I have a question for either Senator Gant or Chief of Staff Fulton. Just is this going to go backward in time? Are we going to have a – I mean, obviously there's a lot of contracts out there. And I'm just wondering on the implementation side, is this something you're going to do on a go-forward basis, or are we going to try and go back and catch all the contracts that are in place now?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Knutson, we have not gone backward to this point simply because folks in labor going forward was easier. If we get the system up and going, would we go back and put contracts that are current term on? That's possible. I don't think we'd go back and put archived material on, for example. Our focus would be on being live going forward.
Senator Knutson.
yeah, I mean, it seems to me that it's obviously a lot easier just to do this on a go-forward basis, which strikes me as a pretty rational basis to proceed.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Knudsen, that was why ultimately last year when we had the RFP bill going into effect July 1, we went live with those contracts, and you can, if you pull up OpenSD now, can go in there and search by vendor, and I'll link through to some incredibly scintillating reading with all those contracts that are out there. So that's kind of our plan going forward.
Additional questions? Additional questions? Close for committee discussion and or action. We do have an amendment before us.
A
motion. We have a motion. We have a second. We have a motion. We have a second. Is there discussion? Senator Tribe-Berry, Senator Knudsen was the second. All those in favor of Amendment 82OA?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion. Amendment carries. Senate Bill 82 as amended. We have a due pass as amended from Senator Heiterprim and a second from Senator Abdallah. We have a motion. We have a second. Is there discussion? Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdallah?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Heiterprim?
Aye.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Tribeck-Berry?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
Aye. Senate Bill 82 passes as amended. Motion. That then brings us to Senate Bill 93. Do we have proponents for Senate Bill 93? Our committee will be at ease for the 45 seconds, for the 2.5 seconds that it takes for Senator Klocek to come and address his bills. Senate Bill 93. Proponents for Senate Bill 93?
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 93, they probably have honorable members of the committee.
You're going to have to remind us who you are.
Senator Frank Klocek, Senator District 19, Scotland, South Dakota.
Senator Klocek, there is such a thing as Dempster windmills. Is that a Dempster windmill that we have before us?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Would you be so kind as to take it down then? No, I'm kidding. Senator Klocek, Senate Bill 93.
It's a Joel Miscon windmill, I believe.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for bringing visual aids, by the way.
Thank you. I'm trying to bring a little point home here. So, but anyway, Senate Bill 93 comes to you. You probably remember it as last year's Senate Bill 94, an effort to get some tax relief for the small wind generation systems, 5,000 kilowatts or less. And if you remember the testimony from last year, it's a savings of around $120 per site, and it also... wait a minute. You don't have the testimony. It was in a different committee last year. But it did pass that committee and came to the floor for a very lively debate. If you remember the debate on the floor, it's approximately $120 savings. Many of the assessors have told me that it takes more to collect the data and information and plug it into the formula than what they collect off the taxes. And that's why it's here. The primary reason is to give a small exemption to the wind owners, the small wind owners, and to help out with the sales of these type of generators in our state. We talked to GenPro in Rapid City, and the sales in other states are mushrooming because they do have incentives such as this, while in our state they're very much falling behind. And this would help us, several small South Dakota companies, and would help expand the use of these small wind generation machines in our rural areas, and I would be glad to answer any questions and stand by for questions and reserve a little rebuttal.
Thank you, Senator. Additional proponents for Senate Bill 93? Additional proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Luke Temple. I'm the organizer and registered lobbyist for Dakota Rural Action.
Welcome, Luke.
Thank you. If it was okay with you, Mr. Chair, I would like to address three bills in an effort of time, Senate Bill 93, 94, and 95.
As you please.
Okay. So Dakota Rural Action is in strong support of promoting locally and community-owned renewable energy projects and energy efficiency projects. Both of these are important tools for to keep money in local communities and local economies, and these bills will begin that process. So that's why Dakota Rural Action supports Senate Bill 93, 94, and 95. So thank you for...
Other proponents of Senate Bill 93. Other proponents?
Michael Melia, speaking for South Dakota Chapter of Sierra Club.
Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I have submitted a written statement via the LRC website, so if I could quickly summarize, I think I don't need much time. We see this, we have somewhat conditional support for this bill. We see this bill as essentially contained within Senate Bill 58, which we supported in committee on the sixth day, and it's been passed out. And we maintain our position vis-a-vis Senate Bill 58. The main difference here is that the other renewable energy categories that were in that bill are gone, and now we're just left with wind. We can see no good reason why that needs to happen, and we can see many reasons why a full range of renewable energy sources should be contained. Another large difference is the dollar amount, which is reduced here. And in that respect, we urge the committee to consider that the fiscal note for Senate Bill 58 is about to be completed. I spoke with the LRC last Friday. They said they thought their work would be done this week. And once that is done, legislators and citizens will be better able to predict the fiscal impact of renewable energy in our state and debate an appropriate amount or formula for a tax exemption. Thank you.
Other proponents, Senate Bill 93.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Kirstein, South Dakota Farmers Union.
Welcome, John.
I would just kind of echo the comments of those before me. This is a good step in the direction that we need to go with renewable, with wind production in South Dakota. It's a good incentive to have, and I think we need to go down this road. And with that, I'll end. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents? Senate Bill 93. Other proponents? Opponents of Senate Bill 93.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Michael Kenyon, South Dakota Department of Revenue and Regulation.
Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The South Dakota exempts many things, many items of real property from taxation. If you look at most of those exemptions, they're either for a limited amount of time or else a limited exemption. With this bill, you would exempt the blades and the turbines from taxation. In addition, would provide an extra $30,000 exemption. So it's likely that, and it's a permanent exemption. So it's likely that these facilities would be permanently and completely exempt from property taxation forever. We believe that that's too generous of an incentive. We believe that current South Dakota law already provides a very generous exemption for these types of products. Just as a reminder, those provisions are in SDCL 10-6-35.8 through 35.18. What they provide is for a complete reduction in the cost of those projects from the assessed value of the property for a period of 3 years, and then an additional phase out period of an additional 3 years. So you've got 3 years of full exemption and then another 3 years of partial exemption. We think that's an adequate incentive. Would ask you to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Other opponents of Senate Bill 93? Other opponents? Opportunity for questions, members of the committee? Opportunity for rebuttal? Close for committee discussion and/or action. We have a do-pass motion on Senate Bill 93. We have a motion from Senator Heideprum, and we have a second from Senator Hansen. Is there discussion? Senator Gray.
Well, I think it's, what, $32 million or $36 million we're in the hole so far this year. I think this is precisely the opposite way in which we should be going. If we had deep pockets, I'd say, yeah, let's do it. I think there's not a person up here that doesn't want to support wind and local wind in addition to big wind. Well, we don't have deep pockets, unfortunately. And if we did, I think we would still need to prioritize. Do we want to send more to education? Do we want to send more back to the taxpayers? This is not the right bill and certainly not the right time. I would, at this point, move a substitute motion to defer Senate Bill 93 to the 41st day.
We have a substitute motion to the 41st day by Senator Gray. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second from Senator Knutson. We have a motion. We have a second. The second is to the 41st day. Is there discussion to the motion? Ask Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdullah?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Heidefren?
No.
Knutson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Rodin?
Aye.
Trebek-Berry?
No.
Gray?
Aye.
Knutson? I mean, Dempster.
Aye. Senate Bill 93 is moved to the 41st day. That then brings us to Senate Bill 94. Senate Bill 94, do we have proponents? Senator Klocek, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. LLC down in our area.
Senator Klocek, your mic's not on.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 94 comes to you from people from across our state and also from people right down in our area. We have a wind project that's being formed in Bonham County, Southeast Dakota Wind, and this would really help them in developing community-based wind energy projects. I do have, I believe, three handouts. One is a letter from Ronnie Hornstra. I was hoping that a lobbyist for them, Scott Swear would be here to testify today also on its behalf. But anyway, we had hoped that Scott would testify on this as well. But what this bill does, it tries to bring community wind energy into the state. And I do have that handout, and I have one other handout, and I'd like to briefly touch on those. And I know there was some concern about the time is not right in the last bill, but the time is right. We have went the way of windmills in South Dakota on community wind development. We're so far behind other states, it's really ridiculous. Time has caught up with us, and now we have a short window of time. I do have a clock here today from my neighbor, Orville Beekler, who made it for me, and, of course, a windmill to represent that we are behind the times. And next week we'll have the wind tower, so that we will be caught up on the times. But what it talks about, if you look at the handout on community wind farms, there is an investment tax credit right now available, and in the next, I believe it's 4 years, to take advantage of community wind on the national level. And we need to do this. Oh, excuse me. A project, the very last paragraph, it's a stimulus program, it's a nice boom for community wind, but they aren't going to be around for long. A project must be operating by the end of 2012 to qualify for this investment tax credit. For the grant, a project has to be online by 2010 and begin generating by the end of 2012. So that's why it's so crucial that we do something like this. The timeline, the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking. The other handout that I have, and I did shorten these up for you compared to last year. I believe you had a deluge of handouts last year. I made these at my own expense with my own copier, by the way, as well. The community wind energy on the national level. And you look at Australia. You look at Canada. You look at the Netherlands, Germany, Denmark. United Kingdom, and then you come to the United States. And guess what? We're not keeping up with the other countries in the world either. We must do more. Anyway, I just leave that for your information and for your support. And now to get into the nuts and bolts of the bill. This bill is patterned after Nebraska's, with the exception that we did have some help from our rural electric co-ops and others in drafting the bill, and to allow them to be in support of the concept, and they did testify it for last year, the exact same bill, 33% ownership. And that is a very good thing for the co-ops to be involved in this. It needs a resolution of support adopted by a county board or a tribe that is in the seabed project area before this thing can even get off the ground. So it does have to have local commitment by the local local elected government entities. And it does do a sales and use tax exemption from the gross receipts tax. It does notify them on the purchase power agreements, so it's all in line. Everything's on the up and up, and they know where the power's going, where it's going to, all those things. Section 4 talks about the life of the agreement, how those lease payments will be set out to those property owners. And Section 5 talks about the good faith negotiations and the agreeable purchase power agreements. This is a project that's long overdue in South Dakota. Section 8, it goes on through Section 8, talks about the opportunity. It has to be in writing so they know exactly what they're getting, where they're getting, how they're getting. There's nothing left to chance. And again, there's nothing in this bill that obligates electric utility to enter any type of agreements in these seabed projects. And it continues the eminent domain that's also available in other projects as well. So, you know, I'd be glad to answer any questions. I think that the time is now. We're passing a time frame. I know Steve Wegman had said in the next 2 years, wind development in our state is at a crucial crossroads. This is an opportunity to do some good things, and it will help bring community wind and the money from these projects back into our local communities, generating over and over again those seven times, where the large projects that are earmarked, where they're by large corporate out of state and even out of nation investors, those dollars flow into those states and nations' company structures and are lost from our local economy. And that's why we need the seabeds. I would be glad to stand for any questions and would be honored to give a short rebuttal, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Other proponents for Senate Bill 94? Other proponents, Senate Bill 94?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Michael Melius for South Dakota Chapter of Sierra Club.
Thank you, Michael.
We would prefer that Senate Bill 94 include other sources of renewable energy, as I spoke of with respect to Senate Bill 93, such as those that are listed in Senate Bill 58 or in current statute, such as at SDCL 10-6-35.8. A diverse mix of renewable energy sources is best for several reasons. One is the seasonal availability of renewable energies, especially like solar and wind. Wind power in South Dakota is strongest in the winter and spring. Solar power is strongest in the summer when the midday electrical loads are the greatest, and solar power can help meet those loads. Also, a diverse mix allows communities to choose the renewable energy source that works best for them. Wind power may not be practical for many urban sites. While solar is well suited, solar electric panels can be placed on available rooftops and parking lots with little social and environmental impact. As another example, the potential for biomass is well known in our state through liquid fuels production. Communities that want to consider biomass for electrical production ought not to be excluded from the seabed structure created by SB 94. Community-based renewable energy has a lot going for it, especially in South Dakota with our remote communities and our can-do independent spirit. This is a way for communities to produce their own electrical power from sources whose fuel is clean, abundant, and free. Also, the potential for having community-based renewable energy systems as a backup power source in emergencies should not be overlooked. Technologies for wind and solar power are now well-developed and come down in price to make them within reach of individuals and businesses. However, initial investments in renewable energy can be sizable, especially at a scale that will contribute significant power at a community level. If it is amended as we recommend, SB 94 will provide a framework for citizens to pool their resources for the investments that will make community-based renewable energy a reality in South Dakota. Thank you.
Other proponents of Senate Bill 94? Other proponents? Opponents of Senate Bill 94? Opponents of Senate Bill 94?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jan Talley, Department of Revenue and Regulation.
Welcome, Jan.
Thank you. We are opposed to Senate Bill 94. It provides establishment of rural community-based energy projects. This bill provides an additional exemption for sales and use tax for all personal property purchased for these projects. What the department has found with wind energy projects, approximately 70% of their cost is materials. So this provides a pretty good exemption in the sales and use tax area. It also, the filing requirements for the exemption are SDCL Chapter 126, which there's really no provisions for an exemption from sales tax in those chapters. There are some difficulties in the bill, I note, in administering where the department would have to figure out the power purchase agreements and determine if those are not met. And then possibly the department would have to collect the sales and use tax back, and I don't think there's any provision to do that. I urge you that you defeat this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Other opponents of Senate Bill 94? Other opponents of Senate Bill 94? Questions for proponents, opponents?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gray?
Question for Senator Klochek.
Senator Klochek, this might also give you an opportunity for a rebuttal.
Oh, sure.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'm just trying to get my arms around this. Are you telling the committee that a city, for example, cannot build a wind tower as of today without this legislation?
No.
Okay. If I'm a community, if I'm a South Dakota resident, and I want to put together a seabed project, or a city or a tribe, whatever it might be, and obviously it depends upon how many towers, I imagine. But are these? Why aren't we seeing these currently, Senator Klochek?
You don't see any currently?
Yes.
Right. You are correct.
And why is that? Is it cost prohibitive?
Because we don't pass this bill.
Well, I thought that's what I just asked.
Three reasons. Mr. Chairman, okay, I guess there's three reasons. Number one, we don't have this incentive. Number two, we don't have net metering. And number three, we don't have the IOUs behind this legislation. They haven't been able to work it in their whatever. They haven't found a path. Let me elaborate. In Nebraska, they have one company. Nebraska Public Power. The IOUs, electric co-ops, there's a lot of different companies here in South Dakota, or electric distribution companies, if I say that correctly. I think that's correct. So they're kind of all pulling different directions. And that's primarily the reason. There's not one city. There's been some smaller efforts. This effort here in Bonham County, there's been some efforts up in the Northeast. I know the rural electrics are currently doing something. I stand corrected. The Crow Creek tribe, there is some effort there with the rural electrics to allow some local investment. So there is one project that I'm aware of that are doing it, but the return on investment isn't where it needs to be. The whole effort is not. Needs a little push, I guess, is the words to say.
Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up, if I might. So you're saying tax incentives are not there, and essentially that we don't necessarily have buyers for for this energy. But as I read Section 9, Section 9 explicitly says nothing in this act obligates an electric utility to enter into a power purchase agreement under a CBED. So we don't solve that problem either. Is that correct?
No, Mr. Chairman. It does give them the opportunity. It is a voluntary thing. You don't want to, Mr. Chairman, you don't want to mandate this to them. You don't want the companies to be forced into anything. This strictly is permissive legislation that allows them that opportunity. In Nebraska, Minnesota, Iowa, even North Dakota, Montana, Colorado, if you type in community-based wind, even the state of Colorado is really jumping leaps and bounds with these types of incentives to develop the community-based wind model. It's bringing money back into South Dakota. And then you talk about the tax exemptions. If they're not built, you're not going to get the taxes on them anyway. And you're not going to get the stimulus into the economy that this will. This will be the South Dakota stimulus package like you wouldn't believe if you pass something like this. Without the so-called negative side effects of the federal government one.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Senator Klocek. If Senate Bill 94 were passed and made into law, would the end consumer see an increase or a decrease in their monthly utility bill?
Mr. Chairman, I am not sure. I do not believe it would be an increase. I have no way of knowing. It's going to go up without this, in my estimation, what I've been seeing on all the rates and everything that I've been told. Will it go up more? I cannot answer that.
Senator Green?
Senator Klocek, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. We're talking just about sales and use tax here. Is that correct?
Right.
So you're telling the committee that 4% or 6% or whatever the tax rate happens to be in that given community would make all the difference in the world in terms of building wind projects, say a 4% reduction?
Mr. Chairman, I would say that it would be not all the difference in the world, but it would be a tremendous boost. It really would. On these projects, it could be as small as a $100,000 project or $50,000 all the way to $30 million project. And if we can get some of those jump-started, it would be a tremendous boost. This is a jump start. Say the batteries, Mr. Chairman, say your batteries run down out here in the parking lot and it just about turns over. And we're just about there. We're just about there in getting this thing started, this economic engine for South Dakota. This will give you that jump start to get the thing rolling. It absolutely will.
Questions, members of the committee, Senate Bill 94? Senate Bill 94?
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Klocek, I'm going to presume we've heard your rebuttal or no? Fire away.
Well, I'm just getting warmed up, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you have something, the ability to do something here that very few legislators get to do. You have the opportunity to do economic development right here in your chairs for the long-term best interest of South Dakota. You have the opportunity, as was passed out to you, it was a bill going around, Senator Peterson's bill, that he tried to do similar to the previous bill, and doing some exemption work for the good of South Dakota. This is a thing that we have 2 years under the federal exemption to get done. If we don't do it this year, we're going to miss the boat, I'm afraid, because it'll take that long to get everything run through. So I do ask for your support, not just for the sake of the investors in the community, not just for the sake of the people that sell the wind towers, such as Aberdeen, not just for our local rural electrics, which would be able to participate in this, but for all of the people of South Dakota, saying they want clean, green energy. Yes, this is our opportunity to do that with Senate Bill 94.
Questions, members? Close for discussion and our action. Senator Roden.
Mr. Chairman, I move we defer Senate Bill 94 to the 41st legislative day.
We have a motion to the 41st day, Senator Roden.
Second.
We have a motion, Senator Roden. We have a second, Senator Knutson. Is there discussion? The motion is to defer to the 41st day. Discussion? Senator Knutson?
Well, I think first of all, there's more to economic development than giving away our sales tax. I don't agree that that's the key criteria for really doing economic development. Second, I think you look at the last 3 years, this legislature has made major strides forward in the wind energy area, where you have a bill on the Senate floor that is awaiting a fiscal note, Senate Bill 58, that makes significant strides with regard to small energy projects. We've revamped our processes and promotional incentives for large wind energy projects, and I just don't think it's fair to characterize this as making a big difference in wind energy in South Dakota, because I think our existing incentives and regulation of wind energy is working well.
We have a motion. We have a second. Senator Heiderpern.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm going to oppose the motion to defer to the 41st legislative day. Senate Bill 94 may not be of a great moment. It may not make all the difference in the world, but I think it is. It's a small move in the right direction. And manipulating taxes to encourage development, whether it is contractors' excise tax or sales and use tax, is something that's not foreign to the committee. I also want to say, though, that I think we've made great strides in South Dakota in the area of wind power. I think the administration deserves credit for that, and I see Senate Bill 94 as simply a move to encourage us in that direction.
We have a motion. We have a second. The motion is to the 41st day. Additional discussion, Senator.
Substitute motion do pass.
We have a substitute motion do pass.
Second.
We have a motion from Senator Hansen. We have a second from Senator Heiderpern. Is there discussion? The motion is do pass.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Roden.
Mr. Chairman, well, I would just chime in, and I'm probably making a mistake by speaking to this, because I think that sometimes we get so swept up in the political correctness of wind energy, and we all support wind energy, but sometimes I think we lose perspective. I don't believe for a minute that this legislation would have little, if any, impact on what's the number of small projects that are out there today. And the reason is they are not feasible. Those smaller projects are simply not feasible. They're not even close. And so I think if we're looking at this pragmatically, I hear again today, clean, green energy, clean, green energy. Well, if you look at it from an efficiency standpoint and common sense and logic, the smaller these projects, the less efficient they are and the more cost prohibitive they are. But also, just consider for a minute the amount of energy that's consumed with building those wind turbines. And it gets to a point where, you know, it just defies logic that you're expending a lot of energy building a wind turbine that's very inefficient. So, you know, it sounds like, and I am swimming upstream on the whole subject of wind energy, but let's use a little common sense. Now, the larger the projects get, the closer they become to being financially feasible. But even they aren't at this point. But we are taking steps as a state to develop those large wind energy projects. And as technology develops, we become closer and closer to making them efficient and making them tip the balance where they do make more sense. But right now, we're not even close on these small projects.
We have a do pass motion, Senator Heiderpern.
If I could, I think there's a lot of truth to what Senator Roden just said, and I agree with much of his remarks. It is worth noting, though, that other states have seen development in smaller projects and community-based projects than South Dakota has, and it's worth it for all of us, I think, to ask the question why that is and whether this might not be one means to, in a small way, address that.
Additional discussion? Additional discussion. Motion is due pass. Discussion. Motion is due pass. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdullah?
No.
Hansen?
Aye.
Heiderpern?
Aye.
Knudsen?
No.
Olson?
No.
Roden?
No.
Dabakary?
Aye.
Gray?
No.
Dempster?
No. Motion fails. Ask for a motion.
I think that was a substitute motion.
Okay. Motion then goes to the 41st day. We have a motion that Senate Bill 94 move to the 41st day. We have a motion. We have a second. Is there discussion? Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdullah?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Heidekram?
No.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Durbach Berry?
No.
Gray?
Aye.
Dempster?
Aye. Senate Bill 94 moves to the 41st day. That then brings us to Senate Bill 95. Senate Bill 95, proponents.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we're on a roll today.
Senator, welcome.
trying to find a copy. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Committee, Frank Klocek, District 19, State Senator, Scotland, South Dakota. Senate Bill 95 comes to you as an effort to start some movement towards conservation, energy efficiency projects. You all know about the good senator from Vivian's efforts and the money we've obtained from the federal government for moving towards efficiency grants and bringing some more energy efficiency. And what we've simply done is found an entity in state government where we think that there's some money available and believe that we can make some grants out of this subfund called the Energy Conservation Loan Special Revenue Fund and a new fund, Energy Efficiency Subfund. And we will establish some grants out of there. No more than 50% of the cost will be funded by the project. And it can be in-kind cash, or which must be documented by the applicant, and then it lays out the criteria. And this is for municipalities, counties, or nonprofit organizations. They do similar efforts, I believe, in other states, including, if I'm not mistaken, Colorado and other states in the Midwest as well. And it lays out the criteria for those grants. And talks about installation of renewable energy systems by homeowners, community energy saving plans, energy saving opportunities in the communities. It publicizes that. Education programs in the schools, community and regional energy efficiency alliances, low-cost energy efficiency public awareness campaigns. And anyway, it goes through and it gives a three-month window for those grants. And then it talks about submitting the operations programs. They must file an annual report January 1st of the year, each year, to the Joint Committee on Appropriations. So with that, again, and then there's some definitions. I would ask for your favorable support for this. It's only, I believe, a $300,000 appropriation, and I would ask for your due support for this program. So. And again, it would limit it from not less than $1,000, but not more than $50,000 to be applied for from this grant. And I'd be honored to answer any questions and also ask for a brief rebuttal to properly defend this legislation.
Other proponents of Senate Bill 95?
Mr. Chairman and members of this committee, may I take this down?
You may ask Senator Klocek if you may take that down.
Okay, it's fine. Michael Melius,
welcome, Michael.
South Dakota chapter of Sierra Club. This seems like a good allocation of funds. If it were possible to make a recommendation for some specific use of it, I think the legislation does call for renewable energy projects, and perhaps there's some way for the state to erect some, you know, solar panels, wind energy on you know, wind towers on state property across the state. I know the School of Mines has some very visible small wind towers on their land in Rapid City. They're highly visible to the people of Rapid City. There's small systems is what I'm talking about. There's also a small system there. I think Presentation College in Aberdeen has some solar array on one of their rooftops. It's just an idea I would like to throw out there if that were possible. It would serve as demonstration projects. I know the question of efficiency has been brought up here, and those could be perhaps test projects for small-scale renewable energy, and so that the public could see if they work or not, and they would immediately reduce the state's utility bills. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents of Senate Bill 95? Other proponents, Senate Bill 95? Opponents. Opponents, Senate Bill 95.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Hunter Roberts with the Department of Tourism and State Development.
Welcome, Hunter.
My department speaking in opposition of this bill for a couple primary reasons. First, the Energy Conservation Loan Special Revenue Fund today is currently used for energy efficiency savings projects at state facilities. The way that fund's been used is it's a block of funds out there. We basically provide zero interest loans to the projects, and the projects pay that money back with their energy savings. So it's been a good way to spread state dollars a lot further through, and the way it's been operated, it's a continual fund. So there's a fund there that can continually save tax dollars. The way the bills run, those are DOE, U.S. DOE funds that the state has, and we would need Department of Energy approval to change the way we utilize those funds. So as it's written, we cannot access those funds unless we get U.S. Department of Energy approval. Additionally, another concern the department has is the way the bill allows nonprofits to also qualify for this project. So that opens the door a long ways to using state dollars. So a nonprofit in my mind, let's say I'm a nonprofit petroleum organization, I could apply for these dollars if I'm going to use it for energy efficiency. So I'm going to do fuel savings type thing. If Greenpeace wanted to use their nonprofit to, let's say, promote renewable energy systems, they could apply for this grant. I don't think that's a good use of funds. With that, I would just urge you to vote no for this bill.
Thank you, Hunter. Other opponents of Senate Bill 95? Other opponents of Senate Bill 95?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rachel Byram. I'm with the Bureau of Finance and Management.
Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you. In addition to the comments made by Mr. Roberts, I'll just provide a little bit more information about the Energy Conservation Loan Special Revenue Fund. It was created to account for oil overcharge monies distributed to the state by the U.S. Department of Energy in the 80s. It was one-time money, so when the available balance is gone, there is no more money. Designating and granting $300,000 a year would severely restrict the state's ability to continue making loans and would eventually deplete the fund. This fund has allowed the state to pay for much-needed energy conservation projects, such as a $3.2 million project at the Human Services Center and a $2 million project at the Star Academy. And like Hunter said, or Mr. Roberts said, energy savings are then used to pay back the interest-free loan. Recently, the state has received approximately $23 million in ARRA funding for energy efficiency projects. Local government entities also received $9.5 million for energy efficiency projects, of the $9.5 million, $3.9 million will be public and private loan revolving fund. And with Senate Bill 95's match requirement, the demand for new program is questionable. Also, this bill provides no additional resources for administering the program. Developing and administering the program would require more staff and dollars. The ability to make these loans has been an incredibly efficient and budget-neutral way to make major efficiency building improvements without using M&R dollars. M&R dollars are limited and mainly used to address life safety issues. Senate Bill 95 will only make it more difficult for the state to improve or implement energy efficiencies. With that, I encourage you to defeat Senate Bill 95.
Thank you. Other opponents of Senate Bill 95? Other opponents of Senate Bill 95? Rebuttal? Senator, proceed, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, I think the testimony has been very eloquent by the opponents of the legislation. I do think that this is going down the right path. We could easily implement rulemaking authority and take out the nonprofits if I would think in any way possible that this legislation would pass. But I can count the votes and know where we're going, but it surely can be improved with a smoke out, and we can amend it on the floor. The $3.2 million at the state hospital, I was there 20 years ago when Red Allen and many of us supported Governor Mickelson's plan for the new state hospital at Yankton. That was supposed to be a state-of-the-art, energy-efficient building, and now we find out all those dollars we spent, it maybe wasn't as energy-efficient as we thought. I do think that the resources can be adequately used. Other states are doing much, much more. Once again, we're like the wind tower. And the clock, this is the last clock that Mr. Baker made. The time is running out for him to do woodworking because of his age and everything. Let not this type of legislation be the last opportunity for doing some things for energy conservation. And I would ask for your due consideration to get it to the floor.
Thank you, Senator. Questions for proponents, opponents? Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Mr. Roberts. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Roberts, are you aware of a single electric utility, whether it be investor-owned, cooperative, or public power, that doesn't already have an energy efficiency program established and uses that as part of their business model?
No, I'm not.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Beckberry.
I would appreciate if either of the opponents would give us just a little bit a more perspective, and maybe I missed it, but what is the total amount in the fund now, and how much, in addition to whatever is in the fund and has not been lent out, how much is out on loan and in the process of being paid back?
Mr. Chair, Senator Turbackberry, at the end of FY09, $5.4 million was in the fund. I'm not sure the exact amount that is out on the loan right now being repaid. I could get you that information, though.
And I don't need the exact amount, but is there two or three times that amount that's out on loan or some fraction of that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Turbackberry, of the projects I'm aware of, it's at least twice the amount.
So we've got roughly $5 million in the fund, not yet loaned out, and at least $10 million out on loan that's being paid back. Am I understanding the figures?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Turbackberry, that would be my best guess. Okay. I would have to find exact numbers to confirm.
Questions for proponents, opponents?
Oh, I do have one more question.
Absolutely.
The amount of the fund that is not loaned out, let's say roughly $5 million, is that generating some sort of interest income by virtue of being invested otherwise?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Turbackberry, yes, that's correct.
And can you give us a ballpark idea of what that is and where that money goes?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Turbackberry, in FY09, the fund generated approximately $400,000 in investment interest. I would assume it's part of the state's major investment fund, and it gets distributed at the end of each fiscal year to the fund.
Questions, proponents, opponents? Close for committee discussion and or action. Senate Bill 95, close for committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Great.
I move to the 41st day.
We have a motion to the 41st day. We have a second from Senator Olson. We have a motion and a second to the 41st day. Is there discussion? Ask Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abella?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Heidepern?
No.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Rabach Berry?
No.
Gray?
Aye.
Benster?
Aye. Senate Bill 95 to the 41st day. Thank you. That then brings us to SJR number 2. SJR number 2, proposing and submitting to the electors at the next general election an amendment to Article 3 relating to four-year legislative terms and term limits. And do we have proponents? Okay. Our committee will be at ease for until we see the whites of Senator Hansen's eyes. Senator, we deferred it to Wednesday. We deferred it to Wednesday. That then brings us to SJR number 2. Do we have proponents of SJR number 2?
Well, good morning. Yes, we do have some proponents. I'm Senator Tom Hansen from Huron District 22.
Welcome,
and
Senator Hansen.
Since there are two chairs and two microphones, well, we decided to come as a team. You'll notice that this is a nonpartisan team. We're also representing both chambers, and so even though there's only two people listed as sponsors on the bill, here we are. And you might be inclined to say that when you're riding a dead horse, why not get off? But we don't really think that this is a dead horse, and we're not attempting to, one of the options is to beat him a little harder. You will notice that this has content very similar to a bill that your committee treated us very, very charitably last year and passed it out and passed it to the Senate floor, where they also treated it very, very charitably. When it got to the House, there was a little change that was made, and that's the reason that we're bringing it back, because you didn't get a chance to see it in this form, and we feel really bad about that. It has to do with putting an issue on the ballot for the people of South Dakota to vote on. And you'll notice that it again calls for terms of legislators to be 4 years, both the Senate and the House. But there's a little bit of a complication in making a move in that direction, because redistricting takes place every 10 years. And so we've developed it to kind of correspond with when redistricting would take place. And there would be a four-year term, a four-year term, and a two-year term. In a way, that seems kind of complicated, and I guess it is. But, there's also a benefit, and one of the benefits that seems to come clearer to me all the time is the fact that a four-year term, these are the comments that I hear from the people I have coffee with and at the pool hall. I don't get too much input from them, but, they say, why do you have just two-year terms? And from a standpoint of campaigning, it certainly would save a lot of wear and tear on the bottoms of your shoes if you only had to do it once every 4 years. And granted, there's nothing wrong with asking people to vote for you, but does it really make better legislators for them to serve 2 years than to be here to have the assurance that they're going to be able to be here for four? It appear, another observation that I've made before I turn it over to my partner here is, a lot of times when you come here, and this is true in my case, you come here as a first freshman legislator, and you're all excited, and you think that I've got this process all figured out, and you run around and introduce two or three bills often, which really are not terrifically meaningful. And, there's it's a learning process, but sometimes the best way to learn is to just sit back and listen and observe rather than get right into the middle of the ring and start mixing it up. So you notice the terms of the bill say that elections in a year ending in 3 and a year ending in 7 would be the four-year terms, and the year ending in 0 would be the two-year term. And that way, you eliminate the possibility that when redistricting comes around, you'd have somebody living in one district and representing somebody in a different district. So, granted, it is increasing. The term limits now kick in at 8 years for two-year terms. This would mean the term limits would kick in at 10 years. And I think that, you know, on all of these constitutional issues, there's merit in giving the electorate an opportunity to have a voice. And so I take a little bit of a dim view on the thought that, we'll reject it because the people of South Dakota are going to reject it anyway. And sometimes we're surprised. So with that, I will turn the mic over to Representative Feinstein.
Thank you, Mark Feinstein, State Representative, District 14.
Welcome, Representative Feinstein.
Thank you. I did not have the pleasure of addressing this committee when this bill was up last time. Senator Hansen and I, when we talked about this in the very beginning, it started as just four-year term limits for Senate. And we realized that North Dakota had a similar problem. And for 30 years, they've been wrestling with it constitutionally because they had four-year terms, and they staggered them. And so redistricting created a real monster, as Senator Hansen had alluded to. This fix, by going to 4-4-2, solves that problem that we don't have to get into. It. One of the comments when it came up on the floor of the House was, or might even have been in the committee, that, well, we have term limits and people just voted on them. Well, we're really not changing the practicalness of a term limit, whether you agree with that or not. Going from 8 years to 10 years is really not a significant change in that. We're not really going against voters' wishes. What this does is, and I've heard the comments, is it does strengthen the legislature. We're already weak enough, I believe, and we are one of the three branches of government, and by extending this a little bit, making us a little bit stronger of a body, I think it enhances the system we're here to operate under and put forward good laws for the citizens of South Dakota. And again, to echo Senator Hansen's comments, I keep hearing the same thing. I'm out there circulating petitions right now. People say, well, I just signed them. They think it's a lot of people. I've not heard anybody say the terms are the right length. And so I think by extending them to 4 years, you know, out of every 10 or, you know, 2 4-year terms, I think it's a real improvement, and I ask for your support.
Thank you both. Additional proponents for SJR number 2. Additional proponents for SJR number 2. Opponents. Opponents. Close for committee discussion and interaction. Senator Roden.
Questions?
Absolutely.
I would have maybe both of you come back. I think maybe it goes to prove that there's never been a horse too dead to beat. You know, I don't disagree, and if you give me a little latitude, I might incorporate some comments. I don't disagree with anything you've said, and I think that this is a good idea personally. I think term limits have their benefits. I think that it's reasonable to extend them. Having said that, the practicality of where we're at is this issue's been on the ballot before. It's lost. And I think the problem is there's nobody that has enough of a dog in the fight that has pockets that are deep enough or willing enough to put up some money to help educate the public. On the other side, we have opposition, out-of-state interests that come forward and I think raise a question in people's mind, and given the tendency of people to vote no on ballot issues, it really stacks the cards against us. So even though I agree with everything you've stated, what do you see anything changing as far as somebody being willing to step up the plate and foster this through? Because we see time after time, and I become very disenchanted with certain legislators that will take a very good issue, a very valid issue, and bring it back year after year after year with no intention of doing the legwork to see it through to the end, and we end up discrediting those issues, or they become more marginalized the more we do it without expecting different results. So the question is, do you envision anything changing this year as far as somebody stepping up and seeing the issue through?
Yes, Chair. Senator Rodin, you're right, and I agree with pretty much everything that you say. The one thing is that there have been various runs taken at this issue. This is a little bit different. We had one in particular was to go to 3 4-year terms for everyone, and that is a pretty good idea. But you're stretching out the length of time from 8 years to 12 years, and some people have some difficulty with that, and some people may have difficulty with, it's very, very straightforward and honest that this is stretching the length of term from 8 years out to 10 years. But the one thing is that it has never been presented to the voters in exactly this manner. And I also agree that, the question has been brought, and let's see what it's probably about 12 years now since the original legislation was passed, or when the Constitution was changed, and you even get mixed readings as to the wheels haven't fallen off. We have been able to function. And even myself, I could very easily develop a pretty good argument in support of staying where we are. And you're also very correct in, an issue like this. There was 4 constitutional change issues on the ballot 4 years ago. And, 3 didn't pass, 1 did. And probably the one that was the least significant was the one that passed. Those other 3 issues, I was so amazed that, they were so easy to explain to people why they were good and they didn't. But that doesn't necessarily excuse us from putting a pretty heavy degree of emphasis on the importance of the Constitution. And, we don't want to change it without giving some pretty good thought. And at the same time, there are some times when it needs to be changed. Again, those 3 that failed last time should have. It's unfortunate they didn't pass. And they probably didn't pass for the same reason that you say. You don't have anybody coming out with a lot of money to really mount a political campaign. So, it's not exactly something that any of us would stab ourselves with our own sword. But, again, I guess that the issue is in your hands. This is where things start. And if you choose to agree that it's worth bringing back to the ballot and the Senate chamber, House committee, House chamber agree, the people will get a chance to vote on it. I guess this won't be the only issue that will be on the ballot. We've had a couple that are moving forward in that direction.
Senator Abdullah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm not particularly a fan of term limits. I believe the balance of term limits comes down on the side of non-term limits as far as I'm concerned. But the people have voted on this issue. And for this thing to come back every year in a little different form, the executive branch of the state government is limited to 8 years. The U.S. Congress, the lone U.S. Congressperson that we have is on 2-year limits. I think it's presumptuous on our part to think that we're entitled to 10 years or we should have 10 years when the people have already spoken. This year seems to be the strangest year when there are bills coming before that, I don't like the way this is going, so I'm putting in a bill to repeal that law or to put it on the ballot. And we have voted on this issue. The people have spoken. If the people want to change the term limits, I think that's up to the people. I don't think it's up to the legislature to serve ourselves. And I just think this, whoever said it, we're beating a dead horse to death.
Questions, members of the committee? Senator Knutson.
I think this is to Representative Feinstein, but either one would could answer this. There was a mention of North Dakota having four-year terms, and then you had this anomaly that my term might be continuing and the district that I represent might be changing, conceivably even changing to exclude me from being a resident of that district. Does that create constitutional issues, or is that just an anomaly that, for better or for worse, North Dakota has been able to get through?
Mr. Chairman, in North Dakota, they have not gotten through it yet. It's like they're constantly having issues with it. They actually have four-year terms for House and Senate, and my understanding is they're staggered. So half the legislature is elected one two-year cycle and the other half the next. And that's where they're getting into the problem. And I believe it's constitutional up there. I'm guessing it would end up being constitutional wrangling here. And it's just been a mess for 25 or 30 years that they haven't been able to address it. This, I believe, does stop that from even going forward. And I don't know if I could address the concern of Senator Abdullah, is I think the only reason that we're changing the term limits from 8 to 10 is not to say, hey, we need more power than the governor or something like that. It's to make this work. It's to make four-year terms work, and the only way to make it work is to have a 4, 4, and a 2. And if you didn't go to 10, you really have a mess. And that's really it. It really is not trying to take it out of the hands of the people who voted for 8-year term limits 2 years ago. It's just to make the system work. And it wasn't that.
Senator?
One follow-up question for Representative Feinstein. You allude to North Dakota having 4-year terms, but isn't it true that North Dakota only meets every other year?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, that is correct, but I don't know if that really is. It doesn't answer their problem of the constitutional issues with it.
Questions, members of the committee? Close for committee action and or discussion. Motion?
Move to the 41st day.
We have a motion to the 41st day by Senator Abdullah. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second motion, Senator Abdullah. Second, Senator Gray. Motion is to the 41st day. Additional discussion?
Mr.
Senator Knutson.
This was before us last year in its four-year format, and I hadn't heard until today of the problem that the anomaly that does create when you do redistricting. The joint resolution does provide a solution, but that's a very complicated solution to explain to the public that. Twice you're going to have four-year terms, and then once you're going to have two-year terms. I just think the complexity of the solution mitigates against this, and I think it would be very difficult to explain. So I am going to support the 41st day motion.
We have a motion. We have a second. The motion is to the 41st day. Additional discussion. Senator Roden.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just add my thoughts to that of Senator Knutson, because I like the idea of what they're trying to do, but the answer to my question was no, there is no one that's going to step up to the plate and try and foster this concept through. That coupled with the fact that it is fairly complex, it's harder to understand than what we've had before. And so I think it's silly and counterproductive for us to put more stuff like this on the ballot year after year. I think it's counterproductive. I think we lose some credibility. And until something changes and somebody's willing to step forward, I think that this is just a futile effort. Thank you.
Motion, second. Motion is to the 41st day. Additional discussion? Ask Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Abdallah?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Heidepram?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Trebuchberry?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Hamster?
No. SJR number 2 moves to the 41st day. I've been asked by the governor to introduce that a bill would come before this committee. The bill has to do with liquidation of the remaining property of the South Dakota Cement Plant. Ask for a motion for the capacity for this.
So
we have a motion. Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Ask for a motion to adjourn. Motion. Second. Discussion. We stand adjourned.